This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome back to another episode of Two Girls, One Ship, the podcast where we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer. I'm Genesis, the girl who will never forget the laughter from last weekend. Love you all so much.
Yes, Emerald City Comic Con was amazing, and I definitely am going again. And I'm also Vervada, the girl who just wants to say, hey, soldier.
So, if you're new here, welcome to the beautiful chaos. But you should know that our podcast centers on character and romance analysis and doesn't shy away from exploring the fun of fucking.
Or from the deep emotional connections built between two or more characters using specific in-game dialogue. So if you want to stay spoiler-free, then this is definitely not the podcast for you.
So, here's your fucking spoiler alert.
Thanks for the spoiler alert, N7. Serious Act 3 spoilers and end of game spoilers. Listeners, beware. Just like with all of our previous episodes, we'll assume that you have some background knowledge of the game and character in question, but we will be providing context for those of you who may be unfamiliar.
Today, we are still in Faerun, but we've just made it back after 10 long years in Avernus. A layer of the Hells that is as stereotypically hellish as one gets. Rivers of lava, sulfur and brimstone, vicious imps and cunning cambions abound, torturing poor victims of devilish deals gone wrong in perpetuity. You are there because you were tricked. Someone you trusted to look after you the way you looked out for them betrayed you, sold you, and replaced your heart with an infernal engine. And now you are stuck fighting in a war you have no stake in. But you're good. You're very good at it. But you miss home. You miss your friends. You miss your family. But most of all, you just want a hug. That infernal engine has made you literally too hot to handle. And you are burning up for some physical contact. You are Carlac Cliffgate of Baldur's Gate 3.
The year... Tenere. The place, sleepy little town called Baldur's Gate. Our hero, Carlac, a knock-kneed delinquent from the outer city with everything to give and nothing to lose. I was a kid looking for a way to fill my days and make some cash when I fell into the wrong crowd. Worked for a guy I respected. A lot. Turns out the feeling wasn't mutual. Through the jigs and the reels, he made a deal with Zariel behind my back. You know Zariel, right? Archdevil of Avernus. She put this thing in my chest and set me to work. Well, to war. I learned quick how to stay alive. And the engine served me when it came to killing devils. 10 years of that. The stories I could tell.
Carlac comes from a modest but happy household in the outer city of Baldur's Gate. Her parents are Pluck and Carlac Cliffgate. And while they didn't have much, They had a lot of love for their wild and restless little tiefling. Karlak started working odd jobs early on to help support her parents. Very much comes from a working class background. Her accent and mannerisms help inform of this, without her specifically telling you, aka exposition. Despite the hardships that poverty and rough living bring, Karlak was always joyful and full of life. She loved her city, her friends, and her family.
At some point, Karlak started working for Enver Gortash to act as his bodyguard. Gortash had risen quickly through both the criminal and political circles of Baldur's Gate, and thus had become quite the target. Karlak was the perfect person. This job paid very well, and Karlak jumped on the chance to support her parents. She felt seen working for Gortash. He trusted her with his life and made her feel valued. Some have argued that they may have been lovers at one point. I really don't see it. Karlak was young when she first started working for him. Like, at the oldest, maybe like 18 or 19. I think he just made her feel special in the same way we all probably had a favorite teacher that made us feel special back in school. They saw our value and encouraged us to be our best. Karlak comes from a loving family, but the lure of power to be able to take care of the people she loved was irresistible to her. After a certain point, however, the mutual respect was tarnished. Gortash decided he knew best and thought that, in order for Karlak to achieve her potential, she needed to labor for a devil the same way he had once done. He sold Karlak to Zariel, the archdevil of Avernus.
See, Gortash had his own indentured servitude forced on him as well when he was young. Gortash was once sold to Raphael, and he suffered during his time in the Hells. But he has taken that time of victimhood and changed it to be a trial by fire in his mind. That was the fire that forged his steel. And out of some twisted morality, he believes that Karlak will achieve greatness just like him if she undergoes her own infernal misery. But also, he was paid handsomely for young Karlak, and he used that grand sum of gold to fund his plans for dominating the city of Baldur's Gate. Zariel wanted to test her new infernal engine, and Gortash thought that she would prove to be a great prototype for his dream of infernal automatons. It's a win-win situation, right? Well, as long as you're not Karlak.
Sad. I couldn't let myself feel sad in the Hells. Letting my guard down would have been a death sentence. And letting, say, a Cambion near me would have been disastrous. I thought it best just to keep my distance. But loneliness that deep gets into the marrow. Now that I'm here, among friends, I can feel it burning out of me. Little by little, step by step.
I will do anything for Karlak. Love her so much. She deserves this friendship and love. So like we said, Gortash believes, and he will literally tell her verbatim later in the game, that being sold to Zariel was supposed to help Karlak realize her potential. The game even calls taking the Astral Touch Tadpole realizing your potential. But what Gortash and the Emperor and everyone who thinks they can force you into their personal brand of success fail to realize is you cannot decide someone's destiny for them. This is control, not any kind of mentorship or help. You cannot tell someone what to feel or what is good for them. True freedom is being able to choose, with room to change your mind if you decide later that your choice isn't serving you anymore. Karlak says to Gortash, "You let Zariel take my heart as if any of it was yours to give. It wasn't. she had her freedom taken from her, just like all our companions did in some way or another.
After Karlak's heart was literally and figuratively ripped out, she was made to fight in the blood war at Zariel's behest. Karlak was trapped, and she fought her way through 10 years of pure shit, fueled by vengeance and a desire to live free. She became one of Zariel's most prized fighters. An insult, honestly. To be so highly valued by your slaver. Imagine, 10 years a prisoner, no control over your life, and yet valued as a prized possession. Surrounded by devils and demons who offered no comfort or any form of affection. And physical touch is simply impossible for most anyway, given you are literally on fire, because they replaced your heart with some infernal machinery. Infernal. Meaning of the hells. But it can also mean something cursed, rotten, or annoying. Everything of Karlak held dear was stripped away, except her indomitable spirit.
So Karlak was fighting in the blood war, mowing down the imps and the devils in front of her just as she had done for the prior 10 years. But this day was different. A Nautiloid suddenly appeared, and that flickering desire for freedom roared to life in response. Karlak fought with renewed vigor, fueled with her desperation for escape. And in the meantime, she also ran into Will, who was there to kill her. Karlak managed to make it onto the Nautiloid with Will in hot pursuit, the both of them subsequently captured and tadpoled before the ship escaped Avernus and crashed into the Sword Coast. She was free of Avernus, but not free from Zariel, and certainly not free from the threat of Seramorphosis. She was pursued not only by Will, but also some supposed Paladins of Tyr contracted to bring Karlak back to Zariel.
We definitely talked about the interaction between Karlak and Will on Will's episode, so go give him a listen if you want more Karlak background. And no matter how you find her, she will try to convince you and Will that she is not a devil and refuses to return to Avernus, just to be a slave in Zariel's army again. Her story is written across her skin. 10 years of burns, and scars, and tattoos show a hardened warrior. But those eyes? Those are not the eyes of a monster. Her mannerisms are open and honest. She is an open book. Will is easily convinced that she is not the devil he was told about. But you will have to take care of the Paladins of Tyr, who aren't actually paladins at all. They are literally Zariel spawn. Talk with the dead. You'll figure it out. And just in case it isn't obvious, be sure to go outside before she starts her fiery frenzy in the inn. You will get hurt unintentionally if you don't leave, because she touches everything and it catches on fire. It's not just her frenzy, though. Her engine is burning hotter than it should. So the first order of business is to find her a mechanic. Oh, and remember how a few weeks ago you told me, like, Astarion had a debuff on him while fighting Cazador?
Yeah.
She has a debuff on her called Melting in Frenzy, or like Overheating in Frenzy or something like that, that actually shows you the damage you will take if you approach her.
Oh, right there in that frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I never noticed that one. There's so many little details. This game is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the mechanic. You can find this mechanic in the Emerald Grove, and his name is Damon. Now, I quite like shipping Karlak and Damon together, but we are romancing Karlak now, so Damon just has to stick to his own bellows. Damon is like the best person ever to help Karlach because he was also conscripted into Zariel's army as a blacksmith working on all of Zariel's infernal shit. He informs her that we will need to go find some infernal iron so he can repair her engine. It's not hard to find infernal iron, but let's pretend that you've been wandering around looking for it and gaining approval with Karlach because we need it. We need her to approve of us to romance her. This is also pretty easy to do. She approves of kindness, helping those in need, and being a compassionate friend. She disapproves of indiscriminate violence, minimizing her problems, especially regarding her malfunctioning engine heart, and being insensitive to the plights of others. She's basically like the goodest of all of them, so just be good and she'll love you. Eventually, we find and deliver some infernal iron to Damon back at the Grove, and he upgrades her heart. He warns her that he hasn't fixed her, merely stabilized the engine, so he will do more research and prepare a more permanent repair, hopefully. She's still too hot to touch, but she started to like you. Like you.
Hey, a soldier. I think everyone's asleep. May I? Hello, you. I've been waiting for this all night. Isn't it mad? How good life is. 10 years is a long time to be trapped in the Hells. 10 years without a kind word. A touch. When I look at you, I feel real again. Alive. Gods, I want to ride you till you see stars. Ugh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't tease you or myself. I'd give anything to touch you, but I can't. Not until I can be sure I won't burn you. On that note, I better head back to my bunk. You might not be able to touch me, but you've given me a lot to think about.
I like this. I like this one a lot. Mutual masturbation for the win. Are you kidding me? You can kiss here for a few seconds before being burned, but the two of you can't touch. Now, there is a little bit more to this scene that for an audio format podcast just didn't make sense to keep in. The two of you exchange whispered fantasies behind hidden hands directly into eager ears. And there's no subtitles, so I have a lot of headcanon. Then she says the part about having a lot to think about. And I love this so much. It is a representation of a way to be intimate with a partner that doesn't involve physical intimacy. Similar to a long-distance relationship, or a relationship where one or both of the partners can't physically be sexually active for one of a million different reasons. I love the fact that they added this for the Karlachmancers. Oh, and because I recently discovered this as a hidden secondary option, you can still romance Karlach regardless of her engine. If Damon were to die at the Grove, for instance, and you can't fix her engine, all of her scenes will still play out, but you just lovingly look at her instead. You get to tell her that you love her over and over and over again. You just can't touch her.
Do you know her ending if you don't fix her engine, though?
Oh, no.
Okay. Do you want me to tell you?
Maybe later. Not right now.
Okay. It's not good.
Oh, is that the one where it happens and you don't even realize it?
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone's like, where's Karlach?
Oh, no.
Ash is just like floating by. And that's just the worst to me. Like that no one was even there and it just happened, you know?
I saw that. I just didn't know what would cause that to trigger.
If you don't fix her engine is what that's what it said. I've never done that. So that's what the research told me. Correct me if I'm wrong, internet.
Okay. So hate that, but love the representation of a non-sexual romance. So, okay. A major trope used for Carlack is called the Pollyanna, named for the character of Pollyanna in Eleanor Porter's 1913 novel of the same name. It refers to a wide-eyed idealist character that, despite numerous hardships, never let go of their sunny disposition. Aw, shucks, darling. Now, Carlack is a downplayed Pollyanna because she is a berserker, and she's sweary and says fuck a lot, and I love that for her. But when she is calm, she is a barbarian that squeezes. Oh, her idle dance animation is just the cutest thing ever. Well, sometimes this can turn into another trope called break the cutie, which is what happens if you let Will kill Carlack. So don't do that. Or for another example, when Tali decides to self-unalive when you let the Geth win in Mass Effect 3. But for Carlack, her kindness and fun-loving nature means that literally everyone loves her. Even the token evil companions like Astarion, Minthara, or Lazel. She is the heart of the party.
She sure is. And Carlack truly lives, too. She has a passion for life's pleasures that the others don't, because she's been deprived of them for so long. Astarion is the only other one who can relate to that enforced solitude. Carlack may come off as naive because she is so forward and loud about her love of life, food, drinks, intimacy, and of her friends. But in a cruel twist of fate, Carlack is dying. In reality, it's due to the narrative team's devotion to breaking our damn hearts. Carlack doesn't quite know it yet, but her engine can't be fixed. When you meet back up with Damon in Act 2 in the Shadow Curse lands and give him the second piece of Infernal Iron for Carlack, he will tell her. While he has made it so she can now touch others without burning them, he can't stop the engine from eventually burning out and burning her up in the process. It wasn't meant for this realm. It is slowly killing her. All she can think about at the moment, though, is how she can touch others again. If you're romancing her, you should kiss her here. But everyone else should give her a hug. She deserves a hug. She's been asking for a hug the whole first act. You may be tempted to try and reason with her that eventually she should return to Avernus because that way she can live. But she will reply with this.
Listen, I'm never going back. If you said I could die right now or live 1,000 years in the Hells, I'd choose to go out now with my freedom intact. I don't expect anyone to understand that. But I've been dealt a hand most people don't have to contemplate playing. I want to live too, but not under any circumstances. I have the power to choose now, and I'm going to make that choice myself. I don't want to talk about this now. I've been given a huge gift. I can touch the people I love for the first time in a decade. And for the first time in a decade, there are people I care about all around me. Let me enjoy that. Please.
Okay. The acting here is so on fucking point. Are you kidding me?
I literally teared up. Like, I'm a reciprocal crier, and I just hear the tears in Carlack's voice, and it'll trigger me. You know, like, I'll just start tearing up. It's so good. It's everyone in this game is so good, but Sam Bayard, Carlack, is, and Neil Newbon. I mean, I feel like to them, they're like in a league of their own with the emotion they convey. Like, they have such a wide range of emotion in this game that you just hear, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Can't do that. I don't want to cry. Okay, so dear listener, please hit the rewind button a few times and listen to the lighthearted hopefulness of the way she says, "I have the power to choose now." It is so perfectly Karlach and so perfectly good. And then to go right into the, "I have the freedom to touch people." And the tearful relief of being able to feel physical affection. Oh, claps, hats off. So good. To live free or die free, there is no in-between for Karlach. And that's what she chooses for herself right now. The freedom of choice, or the lack thereof, is a huge theme in this game. And the characters that have had their freedom forcibly removed have the deepest wounds to heal. As happy and chipper as Karlach is, all it takes is a simple mention of Gortash to send her into a frenzy. The deep hurt from that betrayal is a wound she nurtures, biding her time until she can get back at Gortash. Now, Astarion and Karlach are similar in that way. They were the only two who were just straight-up slaves. But Karlach is actually Will's foil. Now, we talked about this in Will's episode a bit, but as a reminder, both of them have a devil pact. Although one was entered willingly by Will, and the other was forced. Both are physically transformed as a result of that pact. And while Will's was a punishment for disobeying, and subsequently made it hard for him to exist as the hero he wanted to be, Karlach's transformation was a gift given to her to make her better at what she was already good at. Killing devils. Gortash may not be an actual devil, but he is certainly no saint.
So he's gonna get killed. Once Gortash's role is revealed with the Absolute at the end of Act 2, Karlach urges the party to venture forth faster to the city so she can track Gortash down once and for all. Also, she wants to see her home. She is Baldurian through and through, and she misses her home. Part of this long departure from civilized life is molded into her very character design, something called her fashionable asymmetry. From her lopsided undercut to her shattered right horn and her default character outfits, they all highlight her free spirit and her outsider nature. The others are all pretty much symmetrical, aside from Will's one stone eye. But before we get to confronting Gortash and finally getting to really be with Karlach, we need to take a mid-break. So let's listen to the sponsors of the show, hear some fun facts, and thank our lovely, lovely patrons.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, damn it. I told myself I was going to think of a K-dance in order to dance with Karlach into the mid-break. K-pop came to mind. But there's got to be something else.
I don't know. I'm not a dancer.
Mid-break dance. I still can't think of any dances that have K. I'll look it up in a minute. Karlach is voiced by Samantha Bayart, whose pronouns are they, she, and they have been in a number of things, usually podcasts, video games, and even one short film in 2010 called The Mechanical Heart. Seems like foreshadowing now, doesn't it? They were even nominated for the BAFTA Games Award for performing in a leading role alongside Neil Newbon and Amelia Tyler, who is the narrator. I don't know if we've mentioned her name before, but Amelia Tyler, the narrator, and a few other people. Now, the BAFTAs will happen on April 11th, so stay tuned. But Baldur's Gate 3 has been nominated the most, with 10 nominations across the awards. Hells yeah.
Whoever wins is going to deserve it, but yeah, it's amazing. Also, I found a K-dance. I don't know why I didn't think it, because I love this style. Kuchipudi from India. Gorgeous, gorgeous dance style. Look up on TikTok, because it's athletic and beautiful. Yeah, starts with a K, at least in English. All right, so next fact is Karlak scarring / burns. I see your thought later in there. It's definitely burns and scarring on her body. It's very intense, but she has almost no scarring on her face. I would say it's because of the trope, beauty is never tarnished. But they gave Shadowheart a good aligned facial scar. Also, if you don't know, like, where the scar is placed and how bad the scar is on a face will clue you in whether they are supposed to be a good character or a bad character. And Shadowheart's is actually kind of a mix of both because of the placement across her nose. It's kind of evil, but the fact that it's so minimal and doesn't really take away from her beauty makes it good aligned. Anyway, so maybe they thought that Karlak wouldn't be attractive with facial scarring. I'm not really sure. Personally, to me, it seems jarring that, like, she has such textured and burned, scarred skin that just ends at her neck, especially given that she's been fighting for 10 years. You'd think she would have something on her face besides her gorgeousness.
Well, I mean, she has a broken horn, which is a huge defect for a tiefling.
Yeah, it's like her head. I mean, yeah. I guess to me, the asymmetry is what that translates versus, like, a defect.
Mm. But, so... yeah. And I did have a lot of thoughts on this because V's notes only say the word scars. She added the word burns afterwards because it's like, for me, those aren't scars. Those are burns. They are the melted flesh is what it looks like to me. So the fact that it is all centered on her chest gave me the impression that it was a byproduct of her heart, not her battles.
Yeah. I'm sure some of it is from that.
Now, Karlak was originally voiced by Shayla Nix in Early Access, but much like her foil Will, she was rewritten, redesigned, and recast for the final release version of the game.
She was in Cyberpunk, though. Shayla Nix.
Oh.
One of the names, one of the voices in Cyberpunk. Anyway, so next fact about Karlak, she has a teddy bear named Clive in her tent. It's so cute.
It is so adorable. And also, friend of the pod, or a friend of the pod, collects all the stuffed bears in Fallout 4, and I love her for it. And when I saw the bears in BG3, I started to collect them. And any of the named ones, I dropped them off at Karlak's tent. If you do that, they actually travel with the person from camp to campsite. So Karlak's tent is filled with bears.
You just drop it, like, from your inventory?
Yeah, you can't throw it because Scratch will come and pick up any bears or anything that you throw. But yeah, no, if you drop it, and it'll stick around in their tent. The only thing that I don't know is if you throw the bear, will Scratch tear it up just like dog meat does? Because if you give dog meat a bear, he eats it. I don't know what Scratch does. I need to test this out later on tonight. Now, Karlak has one of the lowest charisma stats of any of the companions, but she is one of the most bubbly and the most well-liked out of any of the companions. Meanwhile, Will has the highest charisma and is hilariously awkward.
I love that. That's something called game story segregation. Anyway, so last fact about Carlock, which is not really a fact, but I just wanted to include it because today that we are recording this is International Women's Day, and I just think it's a good day to talk about Muscle Mommy Carlock, and want to point out that the three standard great weapon users in Baldur's Gate 3 are all women. They're Lazelle, Minthara, and Carlock. And Carlock is the most heavy hitting of the three. Hells yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm also still looking up who this character is in Cyberpunk.
Did you not recognize the name? Because I didn't.
Oh, she's a Ripper Doc. Okay. Specifically in Phantom Liberty. How the fuck did I not know this? Like, this is something that I should know.
No, I mean, it's not Sam Bayart, it's Shala Nix, the early access voice for Carlock.
Okay, that makes more sense as to why I didn't recognize the name. Okay, I definitely know who this fixer is. Or not the fixer, she's a Ripper Doc. Okay, anyways, moving on before I tangent into Cyberpunk brain. Let's talk about Spotify. Spotify, we are finally at 181 ratings on Spotify, which, by the way, is higher than our Cyberpunk rating. So, you know, two girls, hey. Now let's get us to 200. I really want to kick that Cyberpunk Lorecast host ass. She's a bitch sometimes. Shit, the wine's getting to me. This is not good. We're only halfway through. Now, special shout outs to that other asshole working on Cyberpunk, Toasty. And of course, Apollo and Becky, Daddy Bat Knight and Stone Mystheos, Muffiny Cake, Wynn and Lavellany. Big hearts, major loves, all the things.
Yes, thank you forever and always and as usual. Jen, are you ready to make Carlock's flames turn blue from passion, which I think is a cute little touch that they add that you only get if you romance her, and also die a little death and feel alive? Mwahaha.
I think the others are asleep. Hi. Since I met you, all I wanted was to be close to you. Sure, I won't hurt you, right? May I test that theory? I want to touch you as deeply as you can be touched. I want you to be mine, completely. Say it loud. I'm yours, Carlock. I'm yours, completely. I'd like to take you to bed now.
Gods be damned. It's a good day to be alive.
Knowing what I know about the Act 3 scene, the I want to touch you as deeply as you can be touched has me dying. But we will get there. We will get there. To be yours completely means kissing Carlock deeply and passionately. So much so that it turns her flames blue. And if you don't know anything about fire, the hotter the flame, the whiter it is. And on the light spectrum, hitting blue means she is at the hottest of hots she could possibly be. Going to bed with her means allowing your body to be explored by her. She takes you down to the ground gently and slowly caresses your body, paying special attention to your chest and looking at you as if she's never seen anything quite as beautiful as you. And then more and more kisses all over. You then roll her over onto her back and remind her what it's like to be kissed and touched and caressed in all the ways that she has missed over the last 10 years.
It's a good day to be alive. Karlak loves with her whole body and spirit, and she takes nothing for granted. Underneath her smiling, exuberant, and cheerful demeanor, she is a deeply traumatized and scared person. This is called the Stepford Smile, from the feminist horror novel The Stepford Wives, which you probably all have seen the movie at least, I'm sure. Or there's multiple movies now at this point. Karlak is naturally a happy and optimistic person, but she actually kind of has to remain stubbornly cheerful despite her circumstances because too much anger can cause her engine to malfunction more. It reacts to her emotions the way her heart would if it were still beating in her chest. But the engine doesn't care for her feelings, only her ability to kill demons.
After the party arrives in Worm's Rock Fortress, outside of Baldur's Gate, you will find out that Enver Gortash is about to ascend as the Archduke of the city. If Karlak is present and isn't convinced with a dice roll to cool her jets, she will be thrown into Worm's Rock prison because she is so intent on getting back at Gortash. Now, you can actually ally with Gortash, at least in the beginning, and you'll have to convince Karlak that this is for the greater good, because she will not be happy about this. But she is happy about being back in her hometown, and there are two people she would like to visit, if you spare a moment to go to the graveyard.
Here lie Pluck and Karlak Cliffgate, my parents. Hi, Mum.
Hi, Dad.
Sorry I haven't visited. I've been away. But I'm back now, and I brought friends. I miss you so much. But I'm happy and getting up to some really important shit. Maybe you can see for yourselves. I don't know. You're with me here. Anyway. Taters. Men, I love you in the Cliffgate household. I can't even remember how it started anymore. Lost family lore. There was a lot of silly nonsense in our house. My mates used to say we had our own personal language. I guess I'm the last remaining speaker. Mum used to say there was no such thing as death, that there was only change. Dad thought that was a load of woo, that gone meant gone unless you'd struck a deal with one of the gods. Said he had better things to do in life than beg favors off immortals. I'm not sure what I believe.
This one is so sad. This dialogue hurts me because, as a parent myself, I just wish she could get a big hug from her parents. I just want to give her a hug. It's also a bit daunting for her to contemplate her imminent death, alongside the fact that she doesn't have any belief in what happens after. Like, even if she were wrong, at least it might be comforting to think of an afterlife in some way. At one point, she can say that she thinks she'll just wander eternally in the fugue plane until existence ceases altogether. Plus, it highlights the beautiful and love-filled childhood she had with her parents. How cruel is it to take such a loving and vibrant light of a person and crush them like this? Gortash seriously deserves to die 10 times over. I wish he got stomped the way Kethric Thorm got stomped by Aelin. The saving grace is that Karlak is free now. She's not crushed. And if you're romancing her, like we are in this playthrough, she gets to experience romantic love for possibly the first time in her life. She was at the most 18 or 19 when Gortash sold her to Zariel, so that's why she may come off a bit immature and silly. She was just a kid who had to live through something violent and horrific for 10 straight years, and now she's faced with her imminent death. Like, honestly, I was reminded of her when Hozier sings She's the Giggle at a funeral. in Take Me to Church.
It's one of my favorite songs of all time. I love it.
May we live every day like it's our last. Because you never know when your last will come. Oh, that was great. The food and the company. I know I can't stay forever here with you. In fact, I feel like I don't have long left at all. We've been through so much, and the worst is yet to come. I have every reason to feel terrified, hopeless, giving up. But to be here with you in the city I love, in this world that I love so much, it's all I could really ask for. You hear me? You're all I could ever ask for. I love you. And I know that whatever else this city will throw at us, we can handle it.
Here we go. Karlak has more than a few surprises for you planned. She gets to a special bedroom that she's picked out for just the two of you. And she is lying on the bed waiting for you, soldier. More kisses, and her flame turns blue again. It's quite tender. And it feels almost like a moment I shouldn't be watching. Now, if you have a smaller build, Tav, Karlak will lift you up off your feet and swing you around and toss you gently onto the bed. If you have a larger build, Tav, you stand face to face kissing her, and you tumble into bed with her. Then Karlak takes control. She loves kissing on your chest. And she gives Astarion a run for his money with that leg grab. Holding your body right where she wants you. She reaches in between your legs, caressing and pressing her hips into yours. Tav arches their back, and with a face full of ecstasy, the hip movements continue, and it fades to black as we watch Tav grab the back of her neck. It's a beautiful, romantic scene. A little short for my liking, but that's okay. But unfortunately, this scene is not for everyone. There are a lot of people in this community that play as a male Tav, me being one of them. And to be honest, from a male perspective, this looks like surprise anal penetration. Look, I've watched this scene in every way, shape, or form. Small male, large female, as will, and everything in between. And it's all the same. It's the exact same movements of when you get onto the bed. Karlak lifts your legs and puts her hand in between yours, and it causes your back to arch in that inhale of penetration. We all know the face. Yes, you can headcanon that, yeah, it's a hand job, or maybe she was just enthusiastically playing with your nuts, but I don't know. It looks like you just got fingers up your ass as a man. But I digress. If things go to plan, we will have an actual male perspective on the Karlak romance soon, and not just me with my mask energy. So, I'll repeat my one critique of all the sex scenes in this game. if the last line before the actual sex part was, I need to be inside of you, or I need you inside of me. That's the perfect tree to dictate what scene would play out, and it would give more people more freedom to choose the type of sex you want.
Is this what you meant when you were laughing about the touch you as deeply as you can be touched bit?
Yes, that is exactly why I was dying, because I was like, yeah, honey, you get to touch me pretty damn deep here in a little while.
Gastrointestinally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the different ways to settle things between Karlach and Gortash. If you sided with him all the way up to the first encounter with the Netherbrain, Gortash will be killed, and Karlach will laugh at his death. Yay! That seems satisfying, but that also means that you can't save Will's dad. You won't be able to save the Gondians or side with Wolbrin fucking Bongle, but honestly, he sucks, so why the fuck side with him anyways? Barkus deserved a better friend for everything that he went through. We stand with Barkus. Anyways, the other way is to just straight up kill Gortash. After you emerge from the battle victorious, Karlach will need some time to have a bit of a mental breakdown. Okay, seriously, she has a lot that she needs to process. She finally managed to kill the person who betrayed her, hurt her so deeply. She doesn't feel better. Her broken heart is still killing her. Gortash didn't regret selling Karlach, let alone did he apologize for it. And the tidal wave of hopelessness will drag her under. It's honestly one of the hardest scenes to watch. So I don't want to play the audio. It will make us all cry, and I think it needs to be witnessed on your own playthrough. Romanced or not, Karlach is not one to sit in the dark for long. It's hard to dwell in the darkness when you are the sunshine.
So Karlach will leave to go process back at camp. And the next time you speak with her, she will crack open her ribs and hand you her heart. I didn't think she could get any more open, but she finally admits her fear. All of the companions are faced with their possible demise. It's just inherently part of being infected with an Illithid tadpole. The artifact, the Emperor, they provide some hope. Sure, Gale has the Netherese orb, but he both finds a cure and, before that, brought that shit on himself. It's no less terminal, maybe, but it feels somehow worse, because Karlach never asked for this. She isn't plagued by hubris. She didn't willingly enter a devil pact. And she doesn't serve some dark goddess. Karlach is akin to someone with a terminal illness diagnosis. It just happened to her. She doesn't know how much time she has left, but she knows it isn't as much as she should have.
Damn it. I wish I had a longer road ahead of me. I want to walk it with you. I'm not really tough enough to face any of this, you know? I'm scared shitless. But there's a courage in me I never knew I had. I've always thought I was fearless. Never scared of a fight, of the future. But dying has taught me so much. There's no courage in fearlessness. There's courage in being fucking terrified, but still going forward. Still being grateful. Still trying. We're going to save this city. Together. It's going to be the last thing I do.
I said I didn't want to cry, damn it. Oh. Now this leads us to the possible endings for Karlach. As you may or may not know, you need an Illithid to defeat the Netherbrain. You may already have one if you didn't betray the Emperor, or you may instead make Orpheus into an Illithid, or you might turn into one yourself. Realize your potential, as the Emperor puts it. Or maybe you took Karlach up on her offer. If she is present for this discussion near the endgame battle, she will offer to become an Illithid herself, because she is already on borrowed time. This would give her death meaning. It's up to you if you let this transformation occur. One could argue that Karlach still dies, while she will try to only eat the brains of the terminally ill victims as an Illithid. Withers has said that Illithid do not have souls, and that Seramorphosis completely destroys the host. They have access to the memories, but Karlach is a mind flayer. Isn't the Karlach we've come to love. And as each brain is devoured, the original host's personality is slowly erased. However, that is one option for players who see this as a fitting end for her. And you can remain in your romance with her too. True confessions, on my first playthrough, that's what I did, because I didn't know. I believed that this was the only option to keep her alive. So when she said, "Soldier, let me do this. Keep me out of the hells," I let her. I don't hate the option. And honestly, I don't hate the epilogue for it either. But I love the other options for her way more.
Yeah, and some of these options were added after the final release of the game because people were not happy with the limited options she had at the end, because everyone, and I mean everyone, loves Karlach, and she deserves a good ending. And I still think it's not the best, but it's probably the best she could afford, honestly, with her personal story. I would never make her Illithid. I actually don't think she was with me in my first playthrough, so I didn't realize that was an option. I don't want her to change like that. She's already changed so much. The only other two options for Karlach both involve her infernal engine of a heart finally overheating. You can just sit there with her as she burns hotter and hotter on this pier, this dock on the Chionthar at the end of the battle. I really liked, for me, because I didn't romance her, I got this dialogue, the friendship dialogue, and I just broke my heart. She'll say, "I wanted to live in my city with my friends." Remember how she said she would never go back to Avernus? The freedom to choose, but also the freedom to change your mind, is true freedom. Will chose to enter a devil pact, but he does not have the freedom to change his mind. Karlach does, thankfully. If you just sit with her and don't ask her what she wants to do, or don't encourage her to re-enter Avernus, she will burn up. She'll die. But if Will is the blade of Avernus, or you have romanced her, you can encourage her to go back to Avernus and live. Honestly, what I do every time is I ask what she wants. And every time she wants to live, "I want to live" is the title of the song that's echoed through many hours of the gameplay. And it's the classical version here that's playing in the next clip.
Prepare the tissues.
Dude, seriously.
We did it, soldier. The city's going to be all right. And so are you.
Engine's finally cooked. Held on just long enough.
So, how'd I do? For you. And for the city, and for myself, and blah blah. But most of all, for you. Above. I love you. You. More than anything. I saw. Oh, God!
Avernus, live. We can't let her die. Not like this. Not now.
You can't.
So, what do you say? Die here now, or live on with the blade of Avernus at your side. Zariel won't touch you. I swear it, Karlach.
Longer. Damn it. It's so bad.
I know.
It's so good.
I literally can't watch this scene without crying. Or even hear it, apparently. And also, Will. I love that Will said that. Like, what we talked about in his episode a little bit of how full circle it is to have him save her and go to Avernus. Like, it's so good. They're both so good. I love Karlach so much. That scene sucks, but Sam Behar, damn you. You did so well.
So we have to go now. I'm just like, okay, let's go. Like,
yeah.
Like, I know that like, I'm running two playthroughs right now. I'm ridiculous, I know. But on my Will romance, I know that this is the path we're gonna take.
Yeah. And that scene's so cute when they get to Avernus, where she lights up the cigar. It's so good. It's like a metal version of Down by the River, if I remember correctly. It's a metal version of whatever song's playing, but I think it's Down by the River. It's so good. And also the epilogue that they added back in. Thank you, Larian, because we needed more. I will never say no to more content. The fact that, like, they go, oh, we found blueprints on this high-level Cambion, and they're, Damon's thinking we could cure it. Like, she could leave. Like, yeah, they don't show that happening, but the fact that there is this beacon of hope for her now is the perfect ending. Thank you for that.
No, I think that it's so cool. It doesn't have to be Damon. It's like any Hellcrafter. So even if your Damon is dead, like,
well,
he died.
I want it to be Damon.
I know, I want it to be Damon too. But if you were to get your engine fixed in Act 2 and then maybe he dies because he's an idiot during the Isabel fight, you can still...
reload.
I'm just saying, if you fuck up, it's okay. Oh, God. Okay. Oh. I need a laughter. I need a something.
Okay, the one thing I forgot to mention in the script that I just remembered now is the fact that you can be with someone else in Act 1 when pursuing Karlach, but come Act 2 when she's able to touch someone, she'll kind of make you choose. She wants to be monogamous, so you cannot have a Halcyon throuple with Karlach beyond Act 2.
She makes it very apparent that as soon as she is allowed to touch you, she wants you all day, every day, all night, every night. So there's no way possible that you would have time to be with anyone else. Yeah.
Are we ready to interview her wife?
Yes. Karlach's wife. It's canon. Sorry, guys. So this, lovely listeners, is where we would normally end the show, but we have a gorgeous special guest coming on. She asked to be on this episode before we even had it scheduled. Please welcome V's wombmate and someone for I got to hug for the first time ever last week. Muffiny Cake!
Hello.
I'm doing my best to talk.
You sound fine. Just a little grumbly.
You've got your Karlach going on. It's all good.
A little.
Okay, tell us your origin story and how you came to love Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay, but really quick, I want to say that in my first playthrough, I romanced Halcyon and Karlach the whole time, and it might have been a glitch. They might have since patched it, but in the epilogue, the owlbear cub, spoiler alert, and I know we already gave one, but you can have it go live with Halcyon, and in my dialogue, I said to send it to me in Halcyon's house, but I had just spent 6 months in Avernus with Karlach, so I was like, I don't know what house that is. But yeah, so I think that's a glitch they've since patched, but I have successfully romanced both of them at the same time that first playthrough.
I don't think that's going to happen anymore.
No, but I enjoyed it while it lasted. All right, so my origin, how did I come to love Baldur's Gate 3? Well, this past summer I had a surgery, and it's a pretty long recovery, the one that I had, so Baldur's Gate came out and I was like, well, I'm not going to be doing anything with my arms anyway. So I spent like probably 2 full entire months just playing Baldur's Gate. And V was out here in Virginia with me, helping me because I was T-Rex arming it quite a lot. So she was helping me out here. So at the time, our dog was still with us. So he needed some help sometimes. He was a senior boy. But it's funny because I've technically played through 4 times now, but my first playthrough, V will remember, I spent 30 hours, my very first playthrough, just doing my thing. And then I went to go talk to the Gith by the mountain pass, and Lazelle was at my party, and she's like, oh, come meet up with me later or whatever, or like come meet up with me or something. And I was like, oh, I'll do that later. So I ran away. I did like 3 long rests. I wasn't thinking about it. I came back and everyone slaughtered. Lazelle's just on the ground dead. And I was very new to like Baldur's Gate, D&D, all of that stuff. So I had no idea that you could revive people. So I just rage deleted my game. Like I just was like, no, Lazelle. And I just deleted all my 30 hours of my first playthrough.
Literally after. 3 seconds after she deleted her game, I was like, what about a scroll of Revivify? And she cried.
I literally cried. I was like, no. So then I just started it over. But it's okay because I learned a lot. I died a lot less in my second playthrough. So, and that my second playthrough was technically my first full playthrough because of that. So I learned the hard way.
Never have I ever intentionally deleted a single save file in my entire life.
I'll never do that again. Because it was not a good feeling.
No.
It was really funny as a sibling to witness that, though, because Schadenfreude. But yeah.
He's like, why did you do that? You have like 7 scrolls of revivify.
Plus like withers. There's like so many ways to revive. It was so funny. She was like, nope, dead is dead. I guess you're like Karlach's dad, so
yeah.
Gone is gone. Yeah. Gotta restart the game.
Like, I can't go back. I can't go back. It's like if I said you too to the server when they told me to enjoy my meal, it's over. I can't ever go back.
Okay, wait. Next question. Did you learn anything new about Karlach today?
Honestly, did I learn anything new? I don't think I learned anything new, but I would like to say there was something that I learned recently about Karlach that you guys didn't mention. It's really tiny. So if you recruit Karlach before Shadowheart, which is really hard to do because Shadowheart's literally in your face as soon as you get on the beach, when Karlach and Shadowheart meet, Karlach calls her a funny frog. And then later when you talk to her about her first impressions of Shadowheart, she's like, well, I like her fringe. It's quite blunt. It's just like really funny and random. And I know there's someone out there who said like Shadowheart makes a comment about it looks like she could pick me up and throw me over her shoulder or something like that. So sometimes I ship them in my head too, if my Tav isn't in the picture, but.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten the Shadowheart saying, I think we need to keep her around. She looks like she could throw me over her shoulder and run me away from battle.
A good one. But yeah, that one made me laugh because it's just so random. I love Karlach's personality. But yeah.
All right. Is there anything that we missed? Any key factors that would have brought more depth to this romance?
Not really that you guys missed so much as it would have been nice for me, I think for anybody who really romanced Karlach, but also just because everyone's such a fan of her, it would have been nice to see something when you do happen to confront Gortash's parents, if you do make it into their, a cobbler shop, I believe. Mm-hmm. You find out all of Gortash's past and you kind of, you know, if you detect thoughts or look around and read some of the notes around their house, you kind of realize what they did to Gortash. And I feel like it would have been nice because Karlach was with me 100% of the time my first playthrough or my second playthrough. And I found them during that time. So, and she didn't say anything, but I think it would have been cool to have, just even if it was like a party banter moment, just for her to say something about it. Because I feel like knowing Karlach's personality, it would have been some type of closure for her, maybe, so she could have maybe understood his motivations a little bit more. Not that it made it okay, but it might have softened her feelings around it in a way. Yeah. I'm not sure. I think it just would have been nice for some kind of comment, though, because no one really said anything. I was saying something. I was like, wow, that's intense. I didn't know that, but then no one really said anything about it, in my party at least.
That's like a recurring theme in the game too, is like that's also what I like, is like not a single one, except for maybe the Nether Brain itself, but then not even then, not a single one of the villains are just outright evil. Like if they're all traumatized, they've all been through something, and the villains are villains because they chose to do it again, not because they are just evil by nature. The Nether Brain, I guess the only sympathy I have is that it was subjugated, but it wants to subjugate everybody, so it can kick rocks.
Well, yeah, but the Nether Brain is like literally an evil monster.
Yeah.
It's not a human that's decided to do shitty things.
Yeah, it deserved its subjugation, honestly. We need a little bit humbling. Okay, so speaking of... Actually, no, I can't. There's no way to transition with that. Rough transition. Did you pick Karlach on your second playthrough? And has your decision changed? Do you have regrets?
Well, I have no regrets. No regrets at all. Technically on my first playthrough, I also picked her, but I picked her because it was just her personality was something I was naturally drawn to, because she, you know, she's a barbarian. She's intimidating looking, but she's very soft, open, honest. She has really strong convictions, but just something that you can feel safe around. Like at least my character, my first Tav, I was kind of more role-playing as myself. And I'm someone who would probably need someone with a more strong personality like that in dark times, because like I have strong convictions, but it would be nice to have somebody who just is so unwavering as like a guiding light, like a foundation. And she's just that perfect character for me personally. So I really liked how she was just lighthearted in the face of all of the dark times that were happening in the story. I also really at the time was drawn to her story, like you were comparing it to like a terminal illness earlier in the episode, and I was really drawn to that too at the time, just because my sweet most beloved dog ever had a terminal illness at that time, and her story kind of helped me process it a little bit more in an acceptance way, because there was really nothing I could do about it, and you know, there wasn't anything Carlette could do about her situation either. I mean, turns out she could, but again, it's fantasy and everything. But at the same time, like the way that she still accepted it and still kind of didn't accept it at the same time, it just felt very real and very vulnerable. It was very relatable for me too at that time. So I just really love her character. And I love Sam Bayard's performance.
The idea of I am going to continue to fight to survive every step of the way until I am confronted with the absolute last moment of here's the decision. I definitely feel that with her.
Yeah, there was always like hope even when it was kind of hopeless seeming. I mean, she even allowed herself to have moments of hopelessness, but she never stayed in it. So I really appreciated that about her character too.
Her scene after killing Gortash is right there with like non-ascended Astarion killing Kazdor, and that
level, oh my gosh, yes,
of pain and anguish and just like, Larian, you have ripped my heart out and I present it to you on a silver platter and you deserve everything that you have done to me. Like, it's so good. So good.
It was so well done. It just felt very, it felt very realistic to me too, because no one handled their situations perfectly, kind of. I feel like a lot of times, at least maybe not so much in recent stories, but a lot of times everything wraps up really neatly, and that's kind of not what happened. Like everyone still like had their trauma, but you kind of got to help them work through it or watch them work through it in some cases. It's just really nice to have that more realistic storytelling, even if it's like you're looking at the setting, you're like, well, we don't have dragons, we don't live in Faerun, you know, we don't have mind flayers, but like there's still so many real elements to the story that it's so relatable.
I feel like that's something that happens in games a lot though, is like the companions. I mean, my first thought was immediately Mass Effect, but it's like every game pretty much is such a high stakes environment, like RPGs specifically, and action games, fantasy games, etc. Like the world's ending probably. And like, not everyone seems so chipper usually, or just like it's business as usual. Like Mass Effect, everyone was kind of like, yeah, there were tiny moments where they were like, oh, you know, I'm kind of scared of the Reapers. Or like in Dragon Age, you're like, oh, I'm kind of scared of like the veil coming down or whatever's going on in that game. But it still never felt like the stakes were that high. And I'm not sure if it's because like their personal lives are threatened with the tadpole, or I mean, everyone's life is threatened when you're trying to save the world, but it felt more immediate maybe. But like they did such a good job of making it really feel personal, and like these individual people are in real time experiencing the potential of their whole world being destroyed, and they reacted very accordingly. Like I feel like they had much more examples of being super scared and afraid and sad. Like it was displayed more, their humanity, like the reaction to that.
Yeah, because they didn't know that it was all going to be okay. But sometimes I get the feeling that the characters, even NPCs in other games, they kind of know it's going to turn out okay in a way. But I guess because there's so much player choice in this game, but also they just did such a good job of balancing, like you were saying. So loved it, Carlette particularly.
Winifer brings up a really good point about how before the epilogue was added in the game, she picked to let Karlach die because that is what Karlach wanted to do. And because in Winifer's line of work, you definitely see a lot of people who have no autonomy over their choice to die with dignity, and that their suffering is just prolonged and prolonged. And that's what Karlach goes through, because it's like, all right, you either die here in the moment of your choosing with all of your free will still intact, or literally send you back to hell.
Yeah. Where she was a slave.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I think it's interesting because when you ask her in that moment now, I'm not sure if it was different before they added the epilogue, but like every time I've got that scene where Karlach is about to burn up on the pier, I say, what do you want to do? And she chooses to live, like she chooses to go to Avernus. I always want her to make that choice. I love that you can ask her rather than just tell her what you think she should do and then the game makes it do that. But like, yeah, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of like letting there be human euthanasia. We have it for animals. I think that's a really nice final decision you can make in such a piece, a gift to give. So, and like I said in the episode, I mean, there was a time in the game where Karlach would rather die than go back to Avernus. She, in my games so far, every time, because I ask her what she wants, she did change her mind. But it's okay. Like if she, her choice was made before and she had gone through with that instead, and maybe her heart was burning up sooner than that scene, then she would have chosen to die. And I would have let her do that too. I think that's a good thing that they have in that game.
Agreed.
All right. So as someone who's done a few playthroughs now, what makes you want to come back each time?
Honestly, every time I start a new game, well, I also create a different character, but so even that alone is a new experience, but I also have learned something new about the characters every playthrough, and I've had a new, at least one, but I mean, honestly, it's been quite a few every time, new experiences that I haven't seen online, or because I try still not to look up too much stuff because I really like to experience things organically. So every time I find something new, like there was an entire part in the Underdark that I completely missed my first and second playthrough. And I was just blown away by how much content there was there. So that's something that keeps me coming back, is I still know that there's more that I haven't done or seen or interacted with. And also it's just another opportunity to explore the story from a different perspective, because my first playthrough and second, obviously I did it through the lens of wanting to kind of insert myself into the story. But the last two times, right now I'm currently on my Dark Urge playthrough, which is my first Dark Urge playthrough. I'm doing it from different perspectives just to kind of see the difference in how the characters react to me, how the world reacts to me, and how I'm interacting with everything. So it's just interesting every time. There's always so much new content. So they really gave us our money's worth with this game, and they still continue to release patches. So Larian has set the standard at this point.
They have for sure. I mean, I'm on playthrough number 5 now and I'm still finding new stuff. Like, it's insanity, or different combinations. The fact that they have gone on record going, we are going to continue to cater to the 1%, I was like, fuck off, that's rude, hate that. And then they clarified with, we mean we are going to continue to the 1% of people who might possibly find this in our game. We're going to show everybody out massive amounts of love, and you're going to get great and amazing content. But if you decide to skip this replay over here in this area, then choose a weird dialogue over here, and then do 27 other things in a random ass order, you're going to get this one little unique dialogue from a character you would have never met. And I'm like,
yep.
I have a love-hate relationship with this as a completionist who wants to see everything.
I think it's really nice, though, because I'm sure Yeah, you know, I'm sure I never will either with all the time in the world right now, but it's nice. I'm trying to also appreciate it from the perspective of like the developers and the story writers and everybody who was involved with the creation of the game, because obviously there was a lot of love inserted into this game. And just even the first time I watched the credits, I was even like crying watching the credits, just because I was like, look at how many names there are, like how many people that were involved in this. And like, there was one credit in particular where they put names of like multiple pets, because the time it took for them to like, be involved in the game was like multiple pets' lifespans. And I was like, that's like amazing to think about how much life happened while this game was being created, and also just how much is in there. Like, it's, you can just feel it. You can feel all the work they did.
The babies were born and people died.
Yes.
Like, they had a whole section of all of that. But, and I guess the last question, oh wait, no, you have to do the poem you told me about. The Carlet
Court. I was going to close out with that if you want. I found this poem today. I think it was today. I've been on a lot of Robitussin today, but I found this poem today. It's called The Lavender Haze by June Bates. And when I read it, it really made me think of Carlac, and it was just very interesting how I found that today. But it says, abandon gentleness. Touch me like you have been waiting for it your entire life. Like we're burning stars and our time's up tonight. It just made me think of her. I was like, that's so cool that I saw that today.
It's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It is the perfect.
I also want to throw out my Carlac sweater. It's hot girl summer.
Love that.
Also, plug your plugs, because I know you got at least one.
Oh, I just have one plug, and it's not even for me. It's for my real life partner, who I also romanced Carlac because he reminds me a bit of her. But he is a photographer, and he has an Instagram called Anchorview Studios. So if you guys like underwater and divey photography like I do, and I mean, it's pretty interesting, you can go check it out because he's got a lot of really cool photos on there.
Awesome.
But I have nothing. I just posted my pictures of my dead dog and my sister. So his Instagram's cooler than mine.
And your niece.
Oh yeah.
Can we clarify that these are pictures of when your doggy was alive?
Oh, he was alive. Yes. Yeah, he's very much alive. Most of them are just memories now, but and now recently I've just been posting pictures from the last weekend, because I don't post that much, but when I did, it was like, it used to be his Instagram, so that's why it's mostly of my dog. My boyfriend's Instagram is way cooler than mine. So you guys should go check it out.
We will put Anchor View Studios in the description. Make it nice and easy for them to click and follow.
Yay.
It took me a long time to realize it's called that because he's a diver. So he views anchors because he's underwater. Anchor View Studios.
You got it. Not a natural blonde or anything.
Nope.
It's ironic, my twin sister doing that to me.
All right. Now, if you like what you are hearing, please be sure to leave a review on iTunes or on Spotify and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can now find me on the Cyberpunk Lorecast with my co-host Toasty, where we explore the foundations of the past, the state of Night City today, and the news of the future for all things cyberpunk. Check out Scyther Audio's newest fan-made production, The Avengers, the audio drama, where you can find me and several of our podcasting friends. And you can reach me in our Two Girls One Ship channel on the Robots Radio Discord. And come give us a follow on all the social medias and on patreon.com/twogirlsoneship. Our theme music was composed by the ever-talented Pipe Man Studios, and our artwork was designed by the esteemed Let's Not. Links to those are in the description.
I am also on the Robots Radio Discord as well, and our own Two Girls One Ship Discord server, where we nerd out on all our favorite CGI significant others.
Be sure to check out our live streams on Twitch on Fridays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Our podcast episodes release on Mondays because you need at least one good thing on a Monday.
So thanks for listening. And remember,
taters and beauty is in the eye of the controller.
Hi, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Ariel.
And we're the hosts of the Legend of Zelda Lorecast, a podcast about all things Legend of Zelda, from Ariel to Zora.
And all the fun things in between.
If you're ready to dive deep and learn more about the Legend of Zelda lore and everything surrounding it, come join us on Legend of Zelda Lorecast. You can find us on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Google, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
We hope to see you soon.